Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across Northern British Columbia. Our podcast is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program that the Specialist Services Committee, which is a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation from local health authorities. We are casting to you today from the traditional territory of the Kleidlay-Tené First Nation. And hosting today's episode are Dr. Shir Chewy and myself, Deanna Danskin.
Our topic today is depression. Although an extremely common condition worldwide, most cases are mild and respond to conventional pharmacological and psychological treatments. But a smaller number of cases remain refractory to treatment, and for these, treatment options are more limited. One promising new treatment is ketamine infusion therapy, but its current availability is relatively limited. Here to talk about his quality improvement work in improving the capacity for ketamine infusion therapy in his local community is our guest today, Dr. Darren Jakubek, a GP anaesthetist practicing in Smithers. Hi, Darren. So glad you could join us today.
Hello.
So before we talk about your QI work, I wonder, we always ask our guests at the beginning of their interviews, is I wonder if you can share with us a little bit of background about yourself, perhaps where you grew up and how you ended up with a career in medicine.
Sure. I grew up in the lower mainland of Vancouver, Burnaby, Port Moody, and went to Simon Fraser, UBC, and then out to Dalhousie for family medicine. And I'd kind of stumbled into medicine. I don't come from a medical family, and it seemed like a good idea at the time, and challenging, and was just interesting. And I just followed that route. After about 5 years of practice, I went back and did anesthesia training in Ottawa, stopped delivering babies, and I did family medicine and anesthesia for about 15 years. In the last 10 years, I'm just doing anesthesia. I've done eMERGE for 27 years now, and anesthesia for the last almost 20. And then I have a little pain clinic and a little counseling clinic with Dreams and this ketamine clinic.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us a little bit about the community in which you work and a little bit about the team of people you work with?
So, yeah, I wear multiple hats. So the community, Smithers is a town of roughly 5,000 with arguably, depending on who you listen to, 20 to 30,000 people catchment area. And we've got kind of 8 operating room slates a week, roughly, in our little hospital. Somewhere between 15 and 25 bed, depending how they calculate them. And emergency room shifts is a different team. And my pain clinic I do with a physiotherapist, and I do my dream work clinic alone. And the ketamine clinic was a full team that was run out of the operating room, actually, and a bit of the infusion clinic. And with my anesthesia colleagues, I've got 2 colleagues. There's 3 GP anesthetists here.
And I love how you call it your dream clinic, actually, which is a fitting name. And I wonder if we can move on to now to the subject of your QI project. So not everyone listening will be familiar with the use of ketamine infusion in treating refractory depression. And in fact, some people, it might almost sound a little shady, but I wonder whether you could tell us what ketamine infusion therapy is and who is it prescribed for?
You know, I'm not sure if I want to answer the question quite in that way or in a short, I'd rather give you a bit of background as to how I came to it, because I'm not the most professional person to answer that question, but I can tell you how I came to it. Can I do that?
Of course.
So I see ketamine as a dissociative agent, similar to psilocybin or LSD or some of these other ones that are out there in that category, as opposed to, roughly speaking, a stimulant or a depressant. So it's one of the medications that can get you out of your head. And I hadn't always been an advocate, or this hadn't been on the top of my mind for a long time. And it's me using the word dream is not, it's not related to this. It's literally, I actually work with people's nighttime dreams as a form of self-reflection. And I have for 15 years, and it's something that I do myself. And I've either hosted or co-facilitated 7 retreats in Smithers and been to 8 other retreats internationally, and part of a larger group of people that work with nighttime dreams as a form of self-reflection. And I found it changes people's lives in a significant way and gets them out of their head and into their body, into their intuition, into their emotions and their feelings. And it speaks the language of therapy and self-reflection. And I just stumbled into ketamine as an option. I knew people went to retreats and did things like ceremonies with peyote and other things. And it's just one of those things I anecdotally heard. And then I read the Michael Pollan's book on how to change your mind, and he helped just give me a bit of words about intention setting. And I thought, goodness, I'd heard that ketamine could be used for this purpose. And in my experience, it is indeed a dissociative agent, which is one that will open up all feelings. It's not necessarily going to make you happy or make you sad, or like alcohol is a depressant or cocaine being a stimulant. It will open up to all feelings. And it was this potential to open somebody up to their feelings that could have true healing capacity. So I'd read and I'd heard about this, and luckily Northern Health already had a protocol that was legal to do infusions for pain if you're an anesthetist or if you have anesthesia training. And I thought, goodness, there's already a protocol. I'm an anesthetist. It's legal. It's above board. And people were already asking me to do this because they knew I already thought about mental health in a different way. And in my pain clinic, I virtually never prescribe anything. And in my dream clinic, I don't prescribe anything. How do we do things with less pharmaceuticals? How do we do things in such a way that we can treat things as a ceremony, set an intention? And if I did a ketamine project, how would I set it up in such a way that it was a healing ceremony and could be used with people with mental health issues, just as I had used nighttime dreams, possibly as an accelerant? So I had a lot of language around this and talked to other people who had done this, and that was my approach. So I've given you a rather scattered approach to where I am, but I think it's necessary to say how I came to this. And I mean, I've worked with a lot of people's nighttime dreams, and I know a lot of the language of the inner journey. So when somebody has a hallucination or what they call a bad trip, I can easily reword that into other means and help people hold their hand as they go to very difficult and dark places. So I have a lot of experience with this. There's there's a scattered approach to your question, and I could talk a lot longer on that, but I needed to rein it in a bit. And that's where the quality improvement sort of process really, really helped me along.
That's really fascinating. And I'm going to ask a little bit more about the process that you're actually doing with your patients. So you mentioned that you do it in the operating room. And can you just tell us a little bit about what actually is involved in the procedure when a patient comes in and goes through this ketamine infusion therapy, sort of like what happens, where it happens, that sort of thing?
Sure. So the process, Michelle, I'll narrow it down to the brass tacks of the actual infusion, and then it's better if I back up to say how they get there. But the actual infusion, I as I try to tell people, or as I fight for space in this tiny old hospital that we have, that it's a ceremony and we should treat it as a ceremony. And we did not do it in the operating room. We found the quietest room that could dim lights and a reclining chair and a warm blanket and a vital signs machine, so they have a blood pressure and an oxygen sat monitor on, but quiet music, headphones or not, and a nurse present or music in the background, and anesthesia either immediately available or just down the hall, but at least a nurse present. So we would try and create, we didn't have quite the plants and the curtains and things that would make a night, but I tried to make it as much of a healing ceremony as possible. And when they would come in, say we'd allow roughly 3 hours, we had a like an 8 a.m. one, 11 a.m. one, and a 2 p.m. one.
You'd come in, I would have already seen them on a previous appointment, done a prolonged intake. We'd get their intentions that day. We'd set them up. We would run either 0.5 to 1 milligram per kilogram through the vein over an hour and let them, over the subsequent 30 to 45 minutes, wake up. And usually within an hour after that's done, they would have a ride take them home. And some people would talk throughout and some people wouldn't. Some people would just become reflective. But then you had to have a counselor in order to get into the program. So you needed to have some grounding. You needed to acknowledge this wasn't, you're not just coming in for an iron infusion. This isn't just something that changes you. You need to change yourself and take an active role in changing yourself. And if you didn't agree to that, I didn't let you into the program. So virtually everybody that was in this program had already tried two or three antidepressants and were somebody we would call failed traditional therapy. So they'd already had therapists. And then I invited everyone to meet at a Zoom meeting. So we would get together as a group once a month.
Yeah, no, that's a very helpful description. So I want to talk a little bit about the project itself, because this was within the sort of structure of a quality improvement project. Can you tell us a little bit about sort of what your aim statement was? Who was on your team that sort of helped drive the work forward? And what were some of the changes that you maybe trialed when you were getting this service off the ground?
Yes. So my team, Lee Cameron, who was the Northwest representative and knowledgeable person, was invaluable for orienting me and pointed out that I had team members in. It's been said that I did this program off the side of my desk, despite it being very well done, I believe. And I think it's largely true because we didn't have program status, but there was one interested person in our OR booking department, Joan, and she made binders and liked this project and knew somebody in the program, and it sparked her interest. So she would help, even though it was within our operating room that we do our bookings with, that's the way we booked people. And they said, okay, through the ketamine program. And I eventually teamed with the head nurse in the operating room to take some of her nurses to sit with whoever was interested in mental health. And then the head nurse, because one of our infusion nurses was interested, and we used the infusion room. And then my two GP anesthetist colleagues, I got them interested so they could be present for these, as we did them every Monday and Wednesday. So eventually they started learning what I was doing and they bought in and they quite liked it. And I had one good patient partner in Laura, who had been doing dream stuff with me in the past and had counselors and had been on a long healing journey. And she sat with some people and eventually started facilitating my Zoom meetings with me, which was wonderful since she'd walked the walk. And it tends to be women who open these doors more. And sometimes I was just aware that it's nice to have some, be it right or wrong or misconceived or not, have some female presence. And sometimes I'd walk away from the Zoom meeting and think, is there some things that are just easy to say to other women? I'm just aware that I'm a man in a world that there's very many men that open this door, which is a whole topic that's different altogether. But and team members slowly grew as other nurses and then other patients, patient partners wanted to be involved in the Zoom meetings and wanted to set things up. They kept offering to help. And as you're right, if I can answer another part of your question here, and that right off the top, you can say, like, what are you up to? And is this really above board here? And for people that haven't opened the door, have the language of inner journeys or ceremonies, or are used to setting intentions, this can seem like it's a bit out there. And I did, luckily, the psychiatrist, there's one local outpatient psychiatrist who had some clients that went through the program and saw a big difference. And Dr. Abu, she climbed on board and said, I support you, whatever you can do. And I thought that was wonderful. And she became part of my PDSA cycle of honing this down. I thought, How about every single patient needs to see the psychiatrist first, and then it gives me legitimacy. It makes it look a little bit less like I've gone rogue here. And she says, okay, you officially have refractory depression. And then she became part of the team. And I started seeing there's a lot of people with pain as well. But I decided as a PDSA cycle to weed out the people with pain that wouldn't acknowledge a mental health aspect, because I found the people who truly embraced this and improved from it are the people that saw a mental health aspect or saw this as a part of a healing journey. Whereas sometimes people in pain at their worst can't see beyond the pain. And they can be a very hard population to treat unless they look outside the pain for other ways. And I found success rates and satisfaction and time in, time out, because I quickly had a very long waiting list. So another PDSA cycle was, okay, no more people with pain. And then I realized this is quite a specific thing. And I know this language and I know what I want and I know the intake and the type of person that may succeed with this, the type of person who truly wants to change and is willing to be with difficult emotions. So another cycle was for me to do all the intakes. So I do all of the intakes, and finding Lee helped me with the language around this and doing my vowels training and learning more QI language, because I hadn't done any quality improvement stuff before this. So it went hand in hand with me growing this program. And once again, I'm a little bit scattered. Did I answer your question?
It did. No, that's actually very comprehensive about your PDSA cycles. And love hearing about including patient partners. And sounds like it was very collaborative between, you know, specialties. Really cool. And so you mentioned this has sort of come up that some people probably are uncomfortable with this because it's a little bit of a different modality. So in addition to that, were there any other sort of challenges that you encountered in the project, and how'd you overcome them?
Oh my goodness. I think that what you just said, people are uncomfortable. I think it's not just with ketamine, but I would argue it's a mirror for ourselves. Are we willing to be with difficult emotions as Western society, where I'm talking to you from? We don't speak about these sort of things. We don't speak about healing ceremonies in modern medicine, if I want to call it that. So there's a stumbling block in terms of selling this to administration or getting program status, or you tell somebody and they say they want to put you in the infusion clinic with another iron infusion, or why can't we put three people in a room and just churn them through? And that is by far the hardest one, that people are reluctant to climb on board. But other than that, because we didn't have program status, this was my volunteer time and Joan and the OR booking department's volunteer time. And we stole nurses from other places for 6 hours and 9 hours, the infusion clinic. And well, the people that are counting the beans and hiring nurses, they notice. And if you don't have somebody in administration on board, this was bound to fail. So the logistics, we're a small hospital, we're an old hospital, we're due for replacement. This was the 1950s or something. There's just no room. We've grown programs, grown operating rooms, like every hospital. So actually finding physical space, we have, I don't want to say we've done some in broom closets with resuscitation equipment right there, but almost just, okay, how do we get the safety? So finding physical space, a lot of challenges.
And on the flip side of that, you clearly found success and you had patients that were impacted in a very positive way by this project. What are some of the factors that you feel contributed to the successful aspects of this project?
The enthusiasm, the buy-in. It's amazing what a few people and the testimonials, like you'd be on a Zoom meeting and somebody who had had a traumatic event in their life speaks, and there's 7 or 8 of us on a Zoom meeting, and they say, before I did this infusion, we did one infusion a month for 6 months. And that was another PDSA cycle, because the psychiatrist would say, well, do these every 2 weeks or every 1 week. And I had to limit it and said, okay, once a month for 6 months, and then you can get a top up at 6 months if you want. So, but the Zoom meetings would come and you'd hear these inspiring stories and it would be infectious. And my colleagues would hear inspiring stories, and you would hear things like, you know, me and my husband are finally talking, and we left the house. I hadn't left the house in 3 months, and I left the house and I actually went to the grocery store. And one person said, I was on 3 medications. I'm off all of those 3 medications, and I'm finding joy in my world. 3 people got back to work that were not at work, but they had actually gotten back to work and found hope in their day. One person said, you know, it's where there's like greasy dishwater and you drop in a drop of soap. That's what my world feels like. It's like suddenly the world has cleared. So people would tell these stories in around the operating room to my anesthesia colleagues, to the nurses, and you just don't hear stories like this taking routine antidepressants. You don't hear semi-miraculous feeling turnarounds at times. And people got talking that they wanted to do the nurse. Some nurses wanted to do these infusions, and Joan in OR booking got excited about it. My colleagues thought, hey, this is really good. This is a worthwhile program. So the upside was it was infectious, because the success is infectious, especially with this population where so much doesn't work. So the program itself, of course, I'm passionate about it. So I'm completely biased, but it's, of course, it's not the be all and end all, and it doesn't help everybody, but the majority of people, it significantly helps. And that is striking in this patient population.
Yeah, that sounds incredibly positive. And it's really great that you have those Zoom meetings, or you were having those Zoom meetings where people had an opportunity to share, and that the people working on it had the opportunity to hear that. Because I think also in medicine, we often don't actually get good news back from patients, or hearing that things are working in a positive way. So that's really great.
Yes, it's so true. The Zoom meetings were so, when somebody said, you know, after my first ketamine infusion, I looked at myself in the mirror, and for the first time ever, I thought, I like myself. And there's like these profound things that you just don't hear. Sorry. Okay, go ahead.
No, that's lovely. It's a great opportunity to hear that stuff from patients. But I want to talk a little bit about yourself for a minute again. Obviously, you wear a lot of hats. You work in the emergency room, also at anesthesia, and doing all these projects. You're clearly very busy. So how do you keep yourself well and avoid burnout? So do you have any sort of strategies, activities you like to do to keep yourself sort of mentally and physically healthy?
I do. I send all my dreams, my nighttime dreams, through email to a dream therapist that lives in the state of Maine. And once every 2 weeks we get together and he reads my dreams back to me, and I get epiphanies about my own well-being. And it's somebody else who understands inner journeys. And I'm part of an international group of people that works with dreams, and we meet probably once a month, just over Zoom. And I keep into like my patient partners that I've made a couple of people. They've become my friends through this journey. So they're building community, and keeping community is important to me, and community that can speak a language of intuitive and feelings and honesty and fellow journeyers. It's this sort of thing that you get from a church community, I would argue. Otherwise, physical activity. I play ice hockey in the wintertime. My kids have left hockey, so I'm no longer coaching hockey. I hike. I like firewood. I like being outside. And just before my emergency room shift on Saturday night, I hosted a little dance party in a warehouse that we rent out for fitness. So that was a fun impromptu thing to do. But wherever I can find some fun, a little bit of reflective practice, a bit of physical, and connect with people.
Yeah, that sounds like a great recipe for keeping yourself well. So as we've mentioned before, you live in Smithers, which is in the northwest of BC. What do you like most about living and working in northern BC?
Community. I like that I know the community, and we have a wonderful community here, and a wonderful medical community here. I like that there's very little traffic. That makes me happy. And there's an airport to get out, if even though Air Canada can be a bit of a pain sometimes, and expensive, at least you can get out, which makes it nice for a northern community that isn't always true of other northern communities I've been in. Since I've worked in the far north, I was in Nunavut for almost 4 years and almost a year in Haida Gwaii. So I've been in some pretty remote places, and Smithers has a lot more amenities than those.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area, and it's actually funny, you're not the first guest to mention the lack of traffic in northern communities as a big bonus. It's a common selling feature, I guess. I mean, I'm based in Prince George, which is a bigger center, and even here I feel like the traffic is not too bad, so that's great. So we're actually running out of time for our interview, so we're going to have to bring it to a close. So thank you again, Dr. Darren Jakubuk, for joining us today. Talking about such interesting and important work, a very fascinating topic. So we will be sending you, as a token of our appreciation, a much coveted, highly special QualityCast North coffee mug. And if the listeners out there would like to find out more about today's guest and the topic we've been discussing, you can find more details on our show notes and on our website, www.nhpqi.ca/podcast, where you'll also find links to other episodes. So if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to our channel on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And until next time, it's goodbye from us, your hosts of QualityCast North. I'm Deanna Danskin.
And I'm Sher Chewy. Today's episode was hosted and co-produced by Dr. Sher Chewy and Deanna Danskin, with technical support from Matt Walker. Original music by Daniel Chewy and artistic support by Reggie Goodine. Further information on the content of today's episode is available with the show notes on our website, nhpqi.ca. QualityCast North is recorded on the traditional territory of the Clayclaytonay First Nation. If you enjoyed today's interview, check out our other episodes available on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you find your podcasts.